The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Katie Neuhauser for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Religion News Service. And today we begin with our first article entitled, How the Bible Became Bingeable. 7 years since the first airing, the mega-hit biographical Jesus drama, The Chosen, is a full-fledged franchise. The evidence? An annual multi-day convention called ChosenCon, merchandise, hoodies, coloring books, jewelry, the fandom, over 308 million viewers, and now a spin-off show, Joseph of Egypt, expected in 2027, even as the original series is about to go into its sixth season. Available on its app as well as streaming, The Chosen is a Bible show designed to be viewed on demand. Created by evangelical Christians, it's also upfront about its agenda to point viewers to Christ. But the impact of The Chosen is perhaps best encapsulated in its catchphrase, Binge Jesus. The Chosen really set the standard for what it means to make a biblical TV series, said Michael Iskander, star of The House of David, a show about the king of ancient Israel and Judea, whose second season comes to Prime Video on March 27th. It's the first of its kind, completely crowdfunded, and to see the fandom that it has built, it's only things like that that allow for shows like House of David to exist. The Chosen has become emblematic of a growing Bible-based trend. On Wednesday, Wonder Project, the studio behind House of David, announced a three-part companion special, The Old Stories, Moses, expected this spring. In addition to its own upcoming spin-off, Joseph of Egypt, The Chosen has inspired The Promised Land, a Moses-era sitcom whose first season debuted last year on YouTube. Joining them are Fox Nation docudramas David, King of Israel, a four-episode series that ended this month, and Martin Scorsese presents The Saints, which will air its Easter episode on Jesus, Mother of Mary, on Friday. Still making the rounds on Netflix is the 2024 Moses docudrama, and Kevin Costner's story of Jesus' birth from last Christmas continues streaming on Hulu and Disney+. The Bible has long been a top draw. In 2014, the History Channel biopic Son of God earned $70 million, and before that, Mel Gibson's 2004 Passion of the Christ grossed over $620 million worldwide. But the recent suite of shows has been more sustained than previous series offerings and more spiritual. It's certainly shown the viability of the genre when it's done for an audience that is very committed to the Bible, not just as a work of literature or as something you can be a fan of, but something that is actually an important part of your faith, said longtime film critic Peter Chataway of The Chosen. That shift is thanks in part to the advent of streaming platforms, which have changed how biblical shows are made. They're larger budgets, bigger sets, and serialized character-driven storytelling. They aim to be both true to Scripture and genuinely entertaining. In many cases, they're not afraid to add extra biblical characters and plot lines to ramp up the dramatic tension. The streaming model also makes it easier to gauge the appeal of faith-based content. I think streaming is in part of this evolution of choice in media that is allowing a genre like faith to really come into its own, said Jonathan Towers, Vice President of Development for Fox Nation. We're in a universe where people are able to, so to speak, vote with their devices. These bingeable Bible shows are more attuned to their faithful viewers because they are being produced by people who know them. Dallas Jenkins, creator of The Chosen and an evangelical Christian, said his faith informs the way the show makes Christ approachable, not in a controversial "The Last Temptation of Christ" sort of way, but by showing a Jesus who cracks jokes and has emotional range. Overwhelmingly, the number one comment I hear is that the show feels human, said Jenkins, son of best-selling Left Behind author Jerry B. Jenkins. Previous projects have often felt stiff or formal or emotionally distant, the characters feeling like icons as opposed to human beings. Like The Chosen, House of David is led by a Christian team with complete creative control. Many people on the show are deep believers, and many people have come back to their faith or renew their faith or discover their faith in a much more profound way as a result of working on the show, said John Irwin, the founder and chief content officer of Wonder Project and executive producer for House of David. The audience, he said, senses when the creator of the show or movie comes from a place of deep belief and conviction. The Christian sensibility comes through in other ways. Though the show is based on the Hebrew Bible and grounded in Jewish context, it's ultimately pointing viewers to Jesus. Similarly, Towers, who oversaw David, king of Israel, said the story makes clear the role David plays in the New Testament as Jesus' ancestor. That's key, he said, because Fox Nation's audience is unabashedly pro-religion, pro-Western culture, pro-Judeo-Christian values. Martin Scorsese presents The Saints, which includes narration and discussion from the Oscar-winning filmmaker, is informed by Scorsese's Catholic faith. In the upcoming Mary special, Scorsese describes Jesus' mother as born without sin. The episode includes a scene where the risen Jesus appears to his mother. Though extra-biblical, it's a moment supported by the ideas of the 16th century Catholic priest Saint Ignatius of Loyola. It doesn't disavow the gospel in any way, but it's kind of a humanistic approach, said show creator Mattai Lisham. She's a real woman, and she's going through real problems and real trauma. The willingness of box office giants such as Costner and Scorsese to lend their names to Bible content is a bonus. Though dramas like The Chosen cast actors for their fit and skill rather than mainstream fame, the show's success has made a star of The Chosen's Jonathan Rumi. The Jesus actor now has a 3.5 million follower, on Instagram, and has spoken at the March for Life, starred in a Super Bowl ad, and has been profiled in The New Yorker. His Catholic faith is central to his public persona. Some Instagram videos of him praying have been viewed nearly 100,000 times. Iskander, who converted to Catholicism from Coptic Orthodoxy last year, is following in the Chosen star's footsteps. Like Rumi, he's spoken at evangelical powerhouse Liberty University and has been featured on the Catholic prayer app Hallow. I look up to him in every way, Iskander said of Rumi. I don't think as Christians we should be quiet about our faith. Obviously, I'm not shoving it down anyone's throat. I would never do that. But at the same time, I love my faith, and it comes first before anything. The era of Bible shows might all be using the same source material, but the projects aren't interchangeable. King David of Israel is a straightforward, close read of David's story, plus commentary. House of David takes a fantastical, action epic Game of Thrones approach to the Hebrew tale and includes plot lines inspired by, but not explicitly in, biblical texts. The Chosen is a drama with comedic moments. The Promised Land reimagines the story of Moses and the Israelites as a workplace comedy. Playing with the genre, sort of expanding our sense of what these stories can be and finding new ways into the stories, that's what I would hope to keep seeing going forward, said film critic Chataway. The executives behind these projects believe the demand for faith-based projects is only accelerating. At Fox Nation, Scorsese's Saints became the most viewed series on the platform and is credited with growing the subscriber base to more than 2 million. House of David earned more than 44 million viewers across 240 countries, landing in Prime Video's list of top 10 most watched shows for several weeks. Kelly Merriman Hoogstraten, CEO of Wonder Project, said that while faith audiences used to be treated as niche, these days studios are recognizing their demand for broader, more sophisticated content. We love big action movies. We love rom-coms. We also want stories that reflect our faith and values with honesty and craft. Give us that, and we show up in a big way, she told RNS. For the directors and creators behind these shows, there's a spiritual reason for their success. By pointing to Christ, they say their shows are meeting a hunger for belief, meaning, and redemption that can't be filled by the average binge-watching session. Next, we have an article entitled, Tehran Synagogue Lies in Ruins Days Before Ceasefire. Quite a switch from our binge article on the Bible. In a video widely shared on X, one of Iran's two chief rabbis stood beside the rubble of Tehran's Rafi Nia Synagogue, holding a damaged sacred book in his hand. The synagogue was leveled in a strike overnight on April 6th, before the ceasefire was declared. One of scores of religious and cultural heritage sites destroyed or significantly damaged by the war led by Israeli and U.S. forces. Rabbi Yonis Hamami Lahazar and Homayan Sameh, the Iranian Jewish community's dedicated representative in parliament, harshly criticized the strike, which Israel took responsibility for. Unfortunately, during the Jewish holidays, the Israeli entity targeted us and did not even spare Jews in Iran, as it struck one of our old and sacred synagogues, Semai said in a statement Tuesday. The synagogue building was completely destroyed, and our Torah scrolls were left under the rubble. Iran's state-affiliated Mehr News reported that the strike fell on a residential area, while the Israeli military said the strike targeted a leading member of the Khat al-Anbiya, the central command of Iran's military. The military statement said it regrets the collateral damage. Though there is no accurate count, between 8,000 and 15,000 Jews are believed to still live in Iran, down from around 100,000 before the Islamic Revolution in 1979. In these days of war, staying in touch with the Jewish community in Iran is not simple, Rabbi Mendy Chiktrik, chairman of the Alliance of Rabbis in Islamic States, told RNS. They are proud Iranians and part of Iranian history and society. In conversations with their families in the diaspora, one feels the deep concern for their safety and well-being. Under the Islamic Republic's constitution, Jews, Zoroastrians, and Christians are unrecognized religious minorities with freedom of worship and representation in Iran's parliament. In practice, human rights groups and other external observers have harshly criticized the unequal treatment of non-Muslims, including the Jewish community, under Iranian law. In 2024, an Iranian Jewish man was executed after a months-long trial that drew international attention, with critics noting that under Iranian law, had the man been a Shiite, he would not have been liable for the death penalty. Last March, the Jewish Telegraphic Agency reported that some 700 Iranian Jews had applied for asylum in the U.S., citing religious persecution, along 13,000 applications from members of other religious minorities. Days before the synagogue's destruction, St. Nicholas Russian Orthodox Church in Tehran was also damaged in a strike, earning the condemnation of Russia's foreign ministry. We are horrified by the news of the serious damage and significant material losses inflicted on April 1st on St. Nicholas Cathedral in Tehran as a result of yet another barbaric airstrike by the U.S.-Israeli tandem, said Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova. The church was built in the 1940s, though the Russian Orthodox community has had a presence in Tehran since at least the 1700s. The church was a place of strength for the Russian Orthodox diaspora and a spiritual link to the historical homeland, said Zakharova. The entire Orthodox community of Tehran, regardless of citizenship, contributed as much as they could to preserving it through labor or donations. On March 2nd, Tehran's Golestan Palace, a UNESCO World Heritage Site that once housed the monarchs of the Safavid and Qajar dynasties, was damaged by shockwaves from a U.S.-Israeli strike. In Isfahan, the centuries-old Shah and Jama Mosque complexes were also damaged by bombardment. Intentional destruction of cultural heritage during wartime is considered a war crime under the 1954 Hague Convention. Peter Stone, president of Blue Shield International, a nonprofit devoted to the protection of cultural heritage worldwide, told RNS that more than 100 sites have been damaged. But he added, from all of the information that we've gotten from photos and videos and media coverage, there doesn't seem to have been any specific deliberate targeting of cultural sites by either the Americans or the Israelis. All of the damage appears to have been what's called collateral damage. Stone noted that the frameworks that underpin international law on the protection of cultural heritage all call for measures to be taken in peacetime. If you're going to protect cultural property, you essentially have to put everything in place before a war kicks off. Because if you leave it until the war has started, then you dramatically reduce the possible mitigation of damage to cultural property. Stone noted that his organization often serves as a conduit to get sites such as hospitals, schools, and religious sites on no-strike lists. Wars, however, scramble the best-laid plans. The strike hit the Rafi Niya Synagogue during the Jewish holiday of Passover. And this is the end of that article. I'm going to try to get two more articles in. They're both slightly shorter. First one is called Survey, Support for Trump's Immigration Agenda Craters with All Faith Groups, Especially Mainline Protestants. Support for President Donald Trump's handling of immigration has dropped across all religious groups over the past year, with approval plummeting among white non-evangelicals or mainline Protestants, according to a new survey by the Public Religion Research Institute. Conducted in February and released on March 26, the PRRI survey of 5,479 adults found majority support for Trump's signature immigration policies is now limited to only two religious groups, white evangelicals and white Catholics. Even there, support has eroded since March 2025. White evangelical support fell from 78% to 69%, and white Catholic support sunk from 63% to 53%. The most dramatic shift was among white non-evangelical Protestants. Their support for Trump's immigration policies plummeted nearly 20 points, from 64% approval to just 46%. PRRI defines this group as generally including white mainline Protestants, who make up about 13% of the U.S. population as of 2024, the same share as white evangelicals. The shift among white non-evangelicals follows a year of mainline Protestant leaders voicing passionate opposition to Trump's mass deportation efforts. The pushback began the first full day of Trump's second term, when the Right Reverend Marianne Buttle, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, preached a sermon with the president in the pews, asking him to have mercy on immigrants. Since then, a growing number of mainline Christian denominations and groups have filed lawsuits challenging various aspects of the president's immigration policies, including rescinding a sensitive locations policy that discouraged immigration raids at schools, churches, and hospitals. Mainline clergy have been a fixture of dramatic protest, such as when a Presbyterian minister made headlines after footage emerged of the pastor being shot in the head with pepper balls fired by Department of Homeland Security agents while he prayed outside an Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility. Many others have been arrested during demonstrations. Hundreds have also been trained on how to peacefully push back against DHS, even as the administration has mocked some of those protesting on social media. Support for Trump's handling of immigration also fell among Jewish Americans from 39% to 30%, as well as Hispanic Protestants from 34% to 23%. Hispanic Catholics fell from 29 to 19%, and Black Protestants from 29 to 15%. The little support for Trump's agenda that existed among religiously unaffiliated Americans also eroded from 35 to 21%. Individual pieces of Trump's immigration agenda fared no better. No faith group polled showed majority support for allowing federal agents to conduct surveillance at hospitals, schools, and churches, although white evangelicals were the most supportive of the idea at 44%. On other topics, white evangelicals appeared to be an outlier, often joined by white Catholics. Majorities of white evangelicals and white Catholics, 63% and 55% respectively, supported the idea of placing undocumented immigrants in internment camps until they are deported, as did roughly half of white non-evangelical Protestants. Only one faith group supported allowing ICE to relocate undocumented immigrants to detention centers in states far from their homes without allowing them to challenge their detainment in court. White evangelicals at 51%. Next were white Catholics with 43% supporting the idea. White evangelicals and white Catholics were also the only two faith groups who did not show majority opposition to allowing ICE agents to conceal their identities with masks and unmarked cars. Among white evangelicals, 39% opposed the idea, as did 48% of white Catholics. Meanwhile, most white mainland non-evangelical Protestants, 52%, Hispanic Protestants, 67%, and Jewish Americans, 68%, Black Protestants, 77%, and Hispanic Catholics, 78%, rejected such practices. Most religious groups did not support increasing funding for ICE, with only the white evangelicals at 66% and white Catholics at 54% showing majority support. By contrast, only 36% of the general public backed increasing the agency's funding. The survey hinted at a potential ideological reason for the sustained support among white evangelicals. White evangelicals were the only faith group to show support for the Great Replacement Theory, the idea that immigrants are invading our country and replacing our cultural and ethnic background. Slightly less than half of white Catholics said the same, as did 43% of white non-evangelicals, 25% of Black Protestants, 24% of Jewish Americans, and 23% of Hispanic Protestants. 17% of Hispanic Catholics said the same. The survey also pointed to potential connections with support for Christian nationalism, an ideology that other PRRI polls have found is most common among white evangelicals. Among Americans who are most supportive of the ideology, those whom PRR calls adherents, 70% expressed support for the Great Replacement Theory, as did 58% of sympathizers of Christian nationalism. Those numbers closely match support for Trump's immigration efforts overall. 70% of Christian nationalism adherents and 60% of sympathizers still voice support for the president's performance on the issue as of February. Even so, Christian nationalism alone may not explain the approval of the president's mass deportation campaign. Hispanic Protestants, a group Trump courted heavily in both of his presidential campaigns, have also shown broad support for Christian nationalism in PRRI surveys. They are second to white evangelicals, with 24% classified as adherents and 30% as sympathizers. But the group now broadly opposes Trump's immigration agenda, with the survey now showing fewer than one in four backing his handling of immigration overall. And that's the completion of that article. And with a little bit of time, I'm going to try to finish as much as I can from the article that is entitled New York Episcopal Diocese Outlines Plan for $1.2 million Racial Reparations Fund. The Episcopal Diocese of New York has launched the second phase of its racial reparations efforts, releasing a new report detailing how it plans to invest the nearly $1.2 million the Diocesan Convention began committing to the effort of in 2019. The document, drafted by the Diocese Racial Reparations Commission and released publicly on March 17th, describes a threefold reparations process that is focused on educating congregations about the diocese's racist history, investing in Black communities in and outside of the church, and pursuing reparations through a spiritual lens. It also makes recommendations on ways to sustain the reparations fund in the long term. The report begins the next chapter of this work in a deepening of our commitment, the Right Reverend Matthew H. Hayde, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of New York, told RNS. Our intention, our commitment, is to weave the recommendations of the report into the fabric of the diocese and into the whole of our ministries. Campaigns for racial reparations have gained support among some U.S. religious groups in recent years, including in denominations that historically profited from slavery, with some reparations efforts having more success than others. Efforts to repay Black communities harmed in the past by Episcopalians are underway in other dioceses, including Texas, Maryland, and Virginia. The denomination also declared racial equity a priority under the leadership of former presiding bishop Michael Curry, its first African-American denominational leader. Last summer in New York, Hayde appointed 12 clergy members to the Moses Commission to pursue the reparations work pioneered by its Reparations Committee, which was established in 2006. The Reverend Marissa Cervantes of Manhattan St. James Church and the Commission's chair said that while it reviewed other diocese reparations models, the group sought input from Black Episcopalians to understand what repair meant to them. We're really looking at coming alongside communities that have historically been harmed and trying to create relationships and work toward repair in a physical way, as opposed to just with grant dollars, she said. The goal was to introduce solutions to the needs of Black communities in the New York area. And there's a tiny bit more to this article, but we're not going to have time to complete it because we have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Katie Neuhauser, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.